You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Happy holidays to you, listener, because the drawing is still open to receive a Merry Clitmas card. If you are listening to this episode before December 18th, 2018, I got 10 of these beautiful holiday cards from the Vulva Gallery. And they say Merry Clitmas on them. And then they have various drawings of vulva, courtesy of the Vulva Gallery. And I want to be able to send these cards to you. So if you want to enter to be one of the 10 who will receive a handwritten holiday card from me to you, all you have to do is go to sexgetsreal.com/holiday. And there you can enter your name and your email address to join the drawing. I will be doing the drawing at 9 a.m. Pacific on December 18th, and I would love to send a holiday card to you, because you can't go wrong with a vulva card. That also helps to ensure that you're on my newsletter. If you haven't heard the emergency episode that I released a couple of days ago, you might want to go listen to it. Facebook, since the time that I actually recorded that, has been really cracking down even more on sex educators. It has gotten rather dire. On Tumblr, they're even banning anything to do with transness and transition photos. It's gotten so bad, and I fully expect the show's page to be banned in, it's a matter of time, honestly, at this point. I will probably have the show banned from Facebook, because it violates their new community guidelines, and because Facebook owns Instagram, there is a chance that I will have to stop posting about the show there too. And who knows what's going to follow after that because of the FOSTA and SESTA laws that are essentially making it impossible for anyone to talk about sex, sexual preferences, anything like that. So I would love to stay in touch with you. You can do that by entering to win the Merry Clitmas holiday cards at sexgetsreal.com/holiday. You can also sign up to get the recommended book list that I created. It's gorgeous and full of books at sexgetsreal.com/books. Or you can go to exploremoresummit.com and sign up to grab your spot. It's free and online and in February. Any of those will get you to my newsletter. And at least for now, I think I'll be able to keep my website and the podcast going. So I want to be able to connect with you if I get eliminated from all of the social media channels. Also, for now, Patreon is allowing me to keep my page, but most of the sex educators that I've talked to have expressed real concern that Patreon is going to purge all of us from their platform as well. So if you have any money that you can give to help support the show, now is the time to do it, because we may not have much time left to be able to do that via Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal, you can donate any amount of money that feels good. But for now, people who are supporting at $3 a month and above get weekly bonus content, all kinds of really fun stuff. And if you pledge at $5 and above, you can help me answer listener questions. So this week's conversation is with Andrew Gerza. He has been on the show before. He just had an entire documentary made about him that you can watch for free online. There is a link. If you go to sexgetsreal.com/EP241 for episode 241, or if you head to the show notes for this episode, there is a link so that you can check out that awesome documentary. But we have such a fun chat all about hiring sex workers and prioritizing pleasure and the agency of being able to engage in sex on Andrew's terms. We talk all about the documentary and him coming out to his mom about some really interesting things, plus the partnership that he has formed with his sister around making some sex toys for disabled folks by disabled folks. And then we talk about a whole bunch of other stuff like toxic masculinity and queer spaces. You are going to really enjoy this super fun conversation. So let me tell you a little bit about Andrew. After you hear the main episode, pop over to patreon.com/sexgetsreal. We did a bonus chat for all of the folks supporting at $3 and above. So don't miss that. And again, don't forget to sign up to potentially win a handwritten holiday card from me at sexgetsreal.com/holiday. And then that also gets you on the newsletter so we can stay in touch. Andrew Gerza is a disability awareness consultant and cripple content creator whose written work has been featured so many places, like Los Angeles Times, Men's Health Magazine, Huffington Post, The Advocate, Everyday Feminism, and several anthologies. He was the only disabled cast member of MTV Canada's hit show One Girl, Five Gays. He is the host of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on sex and disability. So here is my conversation with Andrew, and then pop over to Patreon for our bonus discussion. Welcome back to Sex Gets Real, Andrew. I am delighted to have you here with us.
I am so happy to be back here, Dawn. This show, I've been listening. I re-listened through a whole bunch, and I'm just falling in love with your show again. So I'm so honored to be here.
Yay! Well, I am super excited to talk to you because you've got all kinds of really interesting things going on. And of course, as always, you're having really important conversations about sex and disability. So this promises to be super fun.
So much fun. You and I are going to go off on some weird tangents, I'm sure, but it'll be great.
Heck yeah. Let's see what happens.
Awesome.
So here's where I want to start. You, when we were talking about what we wanted to talk about, said, I also just told my mom I work almost exclusively with sex workers. And that was an amazing conversation. And that is one awesome. I don't think most people who work with sex workers can tell their moms, but I would love to hear kind of how that went, what that was like for you. Let's destigmatize the thing.
Oh yeah. Let's jump right in. So I've been working with sex workers now for about a year and a half, and it wasn't a decision that I came to easily. There was a lot of stigma and self-shame and self-talk that I was telling myself about hiring sex workers that I was like, no, I can't do that. I am not one of those people. All the stuff that I knew was wrong and inappropriate and like all the things, the toxic stuff that I knew intellectually was not okay to feel, emotionally I was feeling. And so it took me a long time to get to a place where hiring a sex worker or working with a sex worker was something I was comfortable with. So I didn't want to tell anybody initially. When I first did it, I remember I had my first session with somebody and I kept it quiet and I didn't broadcast it. It was really personal. It was my thing. I'm not going to tell anybody. It was like a dirty little shameful secret. And then I realized how transformative those experiences were and how important that was. So I started quietly telling friends and started putting it out there, but still saying like, oh, I worked with a sex worker, but like it was no big deal. Like it's still okay, right? Like immediately negating the experience by saying I worked with a sex worker, but, which immediately made the experience less important to me by doing that. And so I started to tell people, but still I wasn't telling my family. And so when they would ask me like, are you seeing anybody? Are you having any sexy times? Because my mom and I are open that way. So I'd say, oh, yeah, I'm seeing some people and we're hanging out. Or I'd say, oh, I have to go get tested this week because a guy I'm seeing, blah, blah, blah. But I would never say, like, oh, it's a sex worker that I'm working with, because I was just so much shame around telling her that. And there was a fear, because I'm a disabled person and because I'm already considered so vulnerable by our population to admit that was like, would they be afraid for me? Would they be afraid for my safety? And would they be concerned about my disabled body being hurt? Would all those things be a worry for them? And I just didn't want my parents to judge me and to think that because I was disabled, this is the only way that I could achieve sexual mm-hmm. pleasure. So I was just really concerned about that and really like worried about how that would be taken. And then so last week, my mom and I were on the phone. We were talking about something. And I said, you know, mom, I work with sex workers. And she went, oh, okay. That's all right. That's great. That's no problem. That's good. And I was waiting for like shock and awe to happen and it didn't. And that shocked me. I was like, why are you concerned? Like I was ready for a discussion about how it was wrong, how I shouldn't do it. And she was like, no, if that's what you need to do to be sexual, then I totally support you. And she said, you know, consensual healthy sex is important. And if this is how you're going to achieve it, then I'm there. And I was like, wow. And I remember sitting on the phone being like, okay. And I took a deep breath and I kind of launched right into some of my experiences with her. And we just had it was almost like we had dropped the stricture of mother and son for a minute and we're like friends, which mm-hmm. we always were. We were very close that way. But this was like another layer of like, we can share in this and you're going to just listen to me and be there for me in this. And that was, it was just a really transformative moment that I'm still a week and a half later still kind of like, whoa, that happened. And like now when I say to her I'm having someone over, like I can use the words I booked a session and have it be completely like she doesn't bat an eye. And that feels just really, as a disabled person who struggled to find community and who struggled to find yeah. acceptance and who struggled to find sexuality that was mine, her understanding that to do this for me took a lot of chutzpah and a lot of like cojones and like a lot of guts to be like, okay, Andrew, you're going to work with a sex worker. This is how you're going to do this. It took a lot for me to get there. So to have her fully accept that. And then what was so cute about it was I put it on Facebook like 2 or 3 days later and she commented the next day and was like, yep, it's totally great. I fully support it. And I love that because people could see that the parent of somebody with a disability was saying, yeah, my son does work with sex workers and I'm there for that.
That is awesome. And go mom.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Hi, mom.
Hi, mom. I love that so much. You know, hiring sex workers is something that I recommend frequently, not only on the show, but to clients. You know, if you're really struggling with something, hire a professional. We hire professionals for so many things. And the only reason we have feelings about sex workers is because of sex stigma and all the things we attach to that. And knowing that you not only gave yourself permission to start doing that and had to confront some of that stigma and shame you carried, but then being able to share that with someone that you care about and have it received so generously is magic.
Yeah, I'm still in shock that she's so accepting, and it just makes me feel like we're that much closer. So I can say to her, I can tell her things about sessions then. I mean, not explicit things, but I can talk about, but if I wanted to be really explicit with her and tell her those things, I could now. It feels like there's a whole like wall that I built that didn't need to be there that's now gone.
That's a beautiful transition in your relationship.
Oh, it makes me, and like she doesn't even, I haven't even told her how, like I've told her a little bit, but I haven't told her how important it is for me that this happened. Like I emailed her a few days after I told her and said, you know, I just want to thank you so much. And she was like, oh, I got your email. You didn't have to be so worried about it. Don't worry. And I that again was a nice reassurance that like she got it. She got that sexuality would be a different journey for me because of my disability and because of all the things that I encounter, because I'm a wheelchair user, because I don't look a certain way, because I can't easily emulate parts of my queer community that are considered quote unquote attractive. So she understood that this is a path I have to take to have my needs met. And that was really powerful.
Mm. And how has it been for you now that you've kind of given yourself permission to do it and you've been doing it for the past year and a half? What is it like for you to know, hey, I am feeling some sort of feelings and now I can book a session with someone and we're going to have something super sexy happen?
It's, you know, it's been an interesting journey of me trying to realize that with a sex worker, there need to be boundaries, healthy boundaries. And that's been a journey for me because when I have sex with somebody, I get attached really fast because I'm so often isolated from my community. So when somebody says, I'm going to engage in sexuality with you, whether or not, whether it's a session or not, I have all these feelings that I have that I'm learning to compartmentalize, and I'm learning to healthily for myself detach from the need to feel emotions for this person that aren't necessarily real, that are projected onto them because they're providing me sex. So I have to, I'm learning to, like, it's okay, it was a session, now it's done, you had a good time, keep that memory, but don't expand that into like the need for a relationship or the need for something deeper, because it can't be that. And that learning, that's been a challenge, but it's been one that I think is really important.
Do you have like someone who is a favorite, or do you have a smorgasbord of like awesome people you've been working with?
Well, I'm exploring different options. I've worked with a few. I've worked with one person that didn't work out. The first person that I worked with didn't work out. Things kind of fell apart and our relationship deteriorated rather. Not quickly, but a few months after we started working together, it just didn't jive anymore, and words were said and moments were had and tears were shed and things went down. So I don't see them much anymore. But then I immediately was like, okay, I'm going to get back on the horse and find someone else. Like, I immediately was like, okay, if sex works the way I'm going to do this, then I'm going to immediately go and hire my next person to work with and try to build that professional, quasi-professional trust right away. I do have one guy that I've been working with for over a year now. And I mean, when we had our year together, we had a little mini like celebration of like, oh, we've been working together for a year. Like, and I sent him an email and bought him a box of cookies and just said like, hey, I really appreciate what we've done together. It means a lot to me because sexuality is hard for me to access. Like, I tell all these workers that like, you're not just coming. I don't see you as just a quote worker. I see this as an important, like, quasi-professional relationship that is really valuable to me. So I try to build that trust immediately because I need them to also do parts of my care, to get me in out of my chair, to get me undressed and redressed. All those things have to be done. So I feel the need to make them as comfortable as possible within our time together.
Something that you just said I think is so important. And culturally, we kind of have these really bizarre rules and boundaries about the relationships that we have with helping professionals. And I think it's a really fine line. Of course, we need to respect everyone's autonomy and that there's money being exchanged or labor being exchanged. And that can be kind of complicated for a variety of reasons. But also, the relationship that I have with my therapist, who I am giving money to and who is a professional, that's a really important relationship in my life. And I consider it an important relationship in my life. And I want it to be a relationship that we nurture and grow into. And I can see how having a relationship with anybody that helps us, specifically someone that we're actually like engaging with body and touch and intimacy with, would be a relationship that we want to honor. And it might not be the kind of relationship that goes in Hollywood movies as being ultimate romance, but I love how you had this ritual around your 1 year anniversary and you've acknowledged that there's this professional line that you're walking, but also that just personally it's important and it feels good.
Yeah. And I mean, it does feel good. I mean, and with the person that I had the year with, there was a moment or two where I was texting them rather frequently and they had to text me and be like, whoa, like, let's take a step back. I'm working with you. So if you're texting me every minute of the day, like, I technically would have to charge you more because I'm working. So it was a wake-up call for me to realize that it wasn't a quote-unquote conventional relationship, and there may be feelings there, but it was an important moment for me to recognize that boundaries are healthy and boundaries are important, because I think when you're disabled, like I am, at least in my experience, boundaries are set for you by non-disabled people telling you what are okay and what's not okay. So my relationship to boundaries has been like, fuck boundaries, I don't have those. I'm going to go against these boundaries because watch me, I can, to prove that I'm an independent person. But this was and I remember when he sent me that text initially, I was really mad. Like, I was upset for a day or two because I thought it was over. I thought I had fucked up again, blah, blah. But then I realized he was just trying to set a proper boundary for himself and for me to realize that this relationship wasn't going to be the love to end all loves. It was simply, it was transactional, but it was still important.
If there is anyone listening who's thinking about working with a sex worker, maybe somebody who is disabled or somebody who is struggling with some kind of chronic illness, what would you offer to them if they're hesitant to work with a sex worker?
I would say, look at your financials, make sure that it's something you're actually able to do and that you have the means to do it. Because I will admit that it's a privilege that I have, and it's a part of my privilege that I have the funds and I'm working enough to maintain those kind of relationships financially. If it's something you can't afford, don't jump into it asking the sex worker for a discount. Don't start the relationship that way. Because when I work and when I go give a talk or go give a lecture on disability, I don't, if the organization was like, hey, can you take 50% off before you get up there? I would have to say no too. So like, it's really important that you check and see that it's financially viable for you to do that, that you're okay, that you can still buy groceries before you buy dick. That's a real thing I've had to let's just say thanks, Visa. It's a real thing. It's a real thing I've had to consider. Make sure you can buy groceries before you buy dick. And really do your research on the person that you want to work with. Send them an email, maybe first, and say, hey, I'm considering this. I really want to see if it's something I can do. I'm really scared. Lay all that out for them, because if they really value their job as a sex worker, they will listen to you and try to make you more comfortable. And so, like I've said to sex workers, I'm seeing somebody tomorrow, and I have said to him multiple times, I'm nervous. And he's like, why are you nervous? We're going to have a great time. Don't worry. And that's really comforting to me too. And like, to have somebody say, don't worry, you're going to enjoy yourself and I'll make sure of it, that I can just take a breath and relax. But make sure that it's something that you're really ready for, and also be aware that if you decide to tell people, your friends, your family, or whoever it is, or your care workers, if you have to, they will judge you. Unfortunately, like my care workers, they're good about it now, but they, you know, there was a period of time during when I first started doing it, like, oh, you're, you know, why are you doing that? Like, go find somebody the normal way. So there will be a lot of stigma around it. And that was really hard for me to hear every day when I would say, like, when I would say I'm having somebody come over, they'd say, oh, are you paying him? And I would say, yep. And they'd say, oh, why? Like, you're an attractive guy. Go find somebody the real way. And I was like, this is a real way. So be ready for some judgment from the sidelines. But no, if it's something you want to do, also realize that you have agency in that. And you have, by hiring a sex worker and working with a sex worker, you are making the decision. They are not your savior. They are not saving you from a poor, sad, sexless existence. You are deciding that this is what you want. And by putting down your hard-earned money, you are saying, this is valuable to me and my sexuality has worth, and here it is. So I think it's a really powerful thing that people can do, but make sure that it's right for you. It isn't right for everybody, and I'm not saying everybody should run out there and hire sex workers. I mean, I think they should. But if it's not if it's not for you, then okay. But if it's an avenue you want to go down, I fully support you. And if anybody wants to talk to me more readily about it, I'd love to chat with them.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate so much what you just said, because I think you're so right. There's this bizarre stigma, and I think it's tied to toxic masculinity specifically.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, sexism and misogyny for sure. And then, of course, just like sex worker stigma and anti-sex sentiment. But like, there's this stigma of like, I shouldn't have to pay for this. And if I do, it says something about my worth as a human being. Yeah. And 100% not true. But we live in a culture that pushes that down our throats all the time. So then people take it in and feel really angry and bitter about it. And I love how you're saying, no, this is a powerful use of autonomy and agency. Like, I am choosing this.
Such a powerful thing. Like, I chose it. Like, I remember when I first hired somebody. I spent 2 weeks going back and forth on that website every day, looking at the exact ad that I wanted to click on, being like, no, 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 I can't. No, 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 no. Like literally every day would go on the site and look at the ad that I wanted to contact and be like, no, I can't. No, that's not for me. I'm disabled, and this would say so much about who I am, and I have to be better and stronger. And I, no, 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 I'm not one of those poor disabled people. And then I was like, then one day I was like, fuck it, I'm horny and I can't do this myself. I'm gonna click on the ad and see what happens. And it ended up being, you know, the relationship didn't end positively, but the interim stuff did, and it taught me a lot about my own self. It made me feel sexy. I felt wanted for a couple hours, and that was really powerful.
So you mentioned the folks who help you, and that was something that was featured in the documentary that you're a star of.
Yay!
Thank
you.
Yes, congratulations. So for everyone listening, I will have a link in the show notes so that you can watch this documentary for free online. It's called Picture This. It's about 33 minutes long, and it's all about you and kind of what it's like to be in your life and grappling with some of these big questions. And one of the things that really stood out to me in the documentary, and I actually talked to Alex about this afterwards, and we just kind of explored it, was you were talking about how you had been gifted a sex toy.
Yeah.
But it was a toy that you couldn't ultimately use on your own, and what that meant, and kind of the mind fuck that ensued.
Oh, that was such a mind fuck.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure can. I was gifted a sex toy by a sex company in the UK. I'm not going to name them because I don't want to. They're great and they support what I do, and thanks, sex company. So they sent me this toy and said, oh, you're disabled, we'd love for you to try it and give us a review. So I said, sure. So they sent it to me, and I had to go to the post office and pick it up, which already is an inaccessible thing. So I went to go do that, and it's in a box that I can't open. So as soon as I got it home, I was like, oh, I can't even open the box to open the toy. Well, I'm fucked because I have no dexterity, so I can't. That should have been sign number one. But so I opened the toy, and I flung it across the room because I had a spasm. So I flung it across the room, and this vibrator, like, clings on the floor, and I was like, well, fuck. So now I had to call my attendant care worker in, who very awkwardly was like, what is, oh, that's okay, it's a sex toy. And I was like, uh-huh, can you just pick it up, please, and let me have a look at it? So they did that, and then a couple hours later, I called and got one of my sex workers, one of my workers that I was close to, helped me put it on. And she said, okay, I'll help you. And so she put it on for me, but as she's putting it on, she's preparing for the cleanup. So she was like, okay, call me in 20 minutes, and I'm going to set the blue pads up and get you ready to be cleaned up. And I was like, cool, I'm trying to get in the zone and get off here, and here and there you are in the corner, like, setting up for the cum shot that I haven't even produced yet. Like, I don't know how to feel about that. So she left, and she said, okay, call me in 20 minutes. And I was like, oh god. So I'm trying to get off in that time limit, because she now gave me a time limit. I felt pressure to, like, hurry up and come already, which weirdly enough, now is totally not how I play. But she left, and I have the thing on my genitals, and it has this button that you're supposed to press to make it go faster and to, like, vibrate in different ways. And I can't reach it because I have no dexterity. So I accidentally spasmed, and I put it on the highest vibration level, and I was unable to turn it off. And it's clamped to my balls, and I can't turn it off.
Oh no!
So for 5 minutes I was like, okay, this is really uncomfortable, but I'm gonna close my eyes and I'm gonna pretend that I'm getting, like, pounded really hard by this toy. So I'm trying really hard to be like, okay, this is what, like, and I've never been fucked that way. So I was like, this is what anal sex is gonna be like, just enjoy this, try to enjoy this. So I was trying to, like, picture a dude fucking me with this toy. It wasn't working, it was actually hurting me a lot, my balls were red, it was really uncomfortable. So finally
So finally
I called my worker, and I said, can you come right now? And she goes, oh, did it happen? And I was like, no, it's kind of hurting my balls, I need you to come right now. So she ran up there and, like, turned it off, and we got me cleaned up and, like, and put pants back on, and, like, nothing had happened. But I remember feeling so annoyed, because I was like, I couldn't do that. What if somebody, like, what if another disabled person tried to use that thinking it would be their, like, favorite toy and it did that to them? So I had to email the company back and be like, thanks for trying, but this was a huge failure. Here's why. Which led me down to, which kind of was the catalyst for what I'm doing now, where I'm trying to create the first line of sex toys for and by people with disabilities.
I think that that is magic. I love that idea. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, that Mia Mingus wrote a story for Octavia's Brood, which is a speculative fiction by people of color series anthology.
I haven't, but I'm already like, where do I get it?
Sounds yeah. Like. Yeah. So it's edited by Adrienne Marie Brown. One of the essays is by Mia Mingus, and that essay was my favorite of the entire book. And it basically is what would happen if ableism just fully took over Earth and they shipped everyone with disabilities off to Mars because they just didn't even want to deal with it. And what would happen if disabled folks could truly create a world for themselves, by themselves, so that everything was accessible for all of the different types of disabilities and needs. And they like create this really beautiful colony where everything is accessible, all the work, all the passageways, all the everything. And so since then I've been thinking, well, what if disabled people and fat people and older people designed all of the spaces and furniture that we had? How much more accessible would it be for all bodies? And so I love that you want to create sex toys like by disabled people for disabled people, because it's really clear when you hear that story that pretty much no sex toy that I've ever encountered is really, truly accessible.
No, I mean, they really aren't. And so what we're doing, we're actually working with RMIT, a university in Australia, because my sister and I are working on this together. So it's a cute little family endeavor that we're doing.
Yay!
Yeah, and my sister's not disabled. She's able-bodied. But I was in Australia this past April for a family vacation. Because, you know, that's how I roll. I just go off to Australia for vacation. But I was there and she said to me, hey, what's one thing you really want to be accessible? And so I said, like, oh, I want a grabber that works. And she goes, well, Andrew, you work in sex and disability. Why don't we just jump right in and make the first line of accessible sex toys? And I kind of grinned and was like, no, it's okay. Like, I'll deal with the sex stuff. And she was like, no, it's a family thing. Let's do it together. And so I realized how transformative that was, because it meant that somebody in my family also saw the need and saw how vital it was and saw that my work that I've been doing for like 7 years already was important and we should collaborate. And so I immediately jumped on board and we started contacting universities and people to find funding, because we want to do our research. This isn't something where we're going to get a bunch of sex toys that are already made and slap some things on them shoddily. We want to do it properly and find out how to make sex toys accessible. And so right now we're looking at physically disabled individuals. So we're looking at people with cerebral palsy, motor things, you know, people who are also maybe a little bit older as well. We're looking at those populations to try to create something, but we have to do the research. So what we're doing right now is we haven't done anything yet. People keep saying, oh, when is the line coming out? We keep going, oh, probably like 4 or 5 years.
It's gonna take a little while.
Probably 4 or 5 years. Thanks so much. So right now what we're asking for is donations for research. So I'm going to just shamelessly plug it right now. If anybody wants to spread the word or if they can donate, we would really appreciate it. They can head over to deliciouslydisabled.ca. And there's a big donate button there. They click on there. It'll take you to my GoFundMe. And we're looking for about – we've raised about $7,000 or $8,000. We're looking for about $15,000. So whatever you can throw in, if you can. Or if you're disabled and you can't spend the money, because I know that a lot of us don't have a lot of disposable income like that. If you can just spread the word and say, look, these people are doing great things. We want to support them. Here's the thing. But I'm really excited by it, because – it wouldn't be adaptation. It would be what I call disability-driven design, which I think is just amazing, because there's not enough companies out there doing stuff around disability and saying, let's put disability first. And I've always been, as you know, I've been somebody who's like, I'm disabled, let's put that out there first. So this is another way for me to do that and to bring in a family member to learn about my experience and to figure out, like, I remember I was sitting with my sister on a Skype call with the university a few months ago when we were just setting it up, and to have my sister sitting there on Skype hearing me tell that story about the vibrator and have her nod in agreement and, like, understand was also a really, again, a really powerful moment for me to, like, bond with my family to see, I can't just, I don't have the ability to get laid easy, and here's my reality. And to have both my mom and sister understand that in different ways this past year has been really, like, wow, just shockingly powerful and so important for me.
There's so much about that that I love. I mean, the first is I saw a talk by Robin Wilson Beatty at Sex Down South a couple of years ago.
Isn't she? Oh, my God.
Oh, she's amazing. And it was all about adapting existing sex toys and sex aids in order to work for folks with a variety of physical disabilities. And the thing that struck me was, one, her creativity was fantastic. And she had some really funny stories, but also some really, like, heartfelt and sad stories about the ways sex toys had failed her. And what really did strike me was she had found creative ways to just, like, alter existing sex toys. And it was kind of like, this is the best that we can do right now.
Yeah.
And that just felt frustrating and said, like, yay that there's a way for some people, but also why isn't there things that just, like, work without
that
having
just
to be
work. Yeah.
Right. Adapted. And just, like, something else that strikes me is so many run-of-the-mill vibrators are just terrible designs.
Terrible,
you know, I mean, it's
kind
of like people are like, let's do the bare minimum to get this sex toy out there. And I think so much of it has to do with shame and stigma and not wanting to try and do research and get the word out to get feedback. It's like, let's just put this out and people will just deal with whatever we do because there's, you know, not a lot of selection. Now, it's gotten a lot better, but one of the things that I think is so beautiful about what you're doing is it's going to really force people to confront a lot of the stories that we all have about what it means to be sexual, what it means to use toys and how that's not a lesser than version of sex, what it means to be disabled and to be in a body that maybe is able-bodied now, but will probably be disabled at some point down the future. I mean, like, it's this nexus of really rich discussions that reveal a lot of the stigma and the fear that so many people have.
Totally. And as you always say on your show, I think it'll bring a lot of yummy discussions to the forefront.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm a listener. I listen to you all the time because your show's the best. So again, I'm kind of starstruck to be here right now. It's awesome. to be back as a repeat guest is really nice.
Well, I'm so glad you're here because every time we talk, it's just so easy and so fun and
so
fantastic.
Fun.
Yeah, so fun. Okay, so let's talk more about your documentary because that leads me to a question that I can't wait to get to. But first, so picture this. It's all about you. It talks about the play party that you had organized and your mom is in it and your best friend is in it. So for people who are tuning in, can you just talk a little bit about what the documentary is about and why it was important to you?
Yeah, the documentary is about my journey as a queer disabled person. And we, back in 2016, we were trying to launch the second Deliciously Disabled Sex Party in Toronto. And things fell apart. The person I was working with, who you see briefly in the film, unfortunately our relationship dissolved and things didn't go to plan. And then the producers came back to me and said, okay, things shifted. Do you now want to be the focus of this thing? And I was like, all right, sure. And so they were looking to do, I remember when the producer reached out to me initially, she was like, I want to do a film on disability, but I don't know anything about disability. And I was like, great, let's talk about this. Because it meant that I could help her shape a narrative around disability in a really real way that wasn't inspiration porn, that wasn't from an ableist narrative, that wasn't from all these problematic views. I could say, okay, use your skills as a filmmaker to bring the story that I'm going to tell you into a true light. And we did that. And so the film is a really, like, short 33 minutes of me trying to navigate queerness, disability, sexuality, along with trying to navigate attendant care, along with trying to navigate, like, my own emotions around it, along with trying to run my own insular business as a disability awareness consultant trying to make all of this stuff go. So I'm surprised that in 33 minutes they captured as much as they did.
There's a lot of richness in a very short amount of time, which to me speaks to really skilled editing and filmmaking, but also just the vulnerability with which you allowed yourself to be captured.
That was tough. I mean, there was points of that filming where they were with me for one day. They were with us for 17, 18 hours. And I remember at the end of it being like, can we be done now? I don't want to do this. Like I was finished, and there were a few moments. The director and I are great friends now, but there were a few moments where I had to say, no, I don't want to do it that way. Nope, here's why. No, I'm disabled and it will look like this. Please don't film it this way. There were a few moments where they had originally wanted me to like look out the window and look kind of sad. And I had to be like, no, because that's going to create the narrative that I'm a sad disabled person. I don't want that. And so then they changed things around for me and we did it differently. But it was a really big learning curve for both of us to figure out how do you tell this story in 33 minutes.
Now that you have this documentary out in the world and so many people are seeing it and sharing about it, you had mentioned to me that you're interested in doing more film work, but in really kind of leaning into the side of film that would be much more revealing about sex and sexuality, and that you had started reaching out to like some mainstream porn companies. So can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. I've been dabbling with the desire to do porn for like a good long time now. But again, the stigma and the fear of like what people are going to think and oh my God. But now it's funny, now that I've kind of outed myself to my mom about using when working with sex workers, I feel much more confident to be like, hey, I want to suck dick on camera. What are your what are your thoughts? And I told her that and she went, okay, like no problem. Like sure. Okay. As long as it's like artsy and all right, great. So she was really comfortable with that. So, and now that I'm being honest with her, I feel like kind of the floodgates are open of all the things that I was afraid to say that I can now say. Because people have said to me, like, Andrew, don't do it. It'll ruin your brand. And I was like, do you realize my brand's already about sex? And if I censor it, I'm not doing a service to anybody. And I think having a disabled body on camera, especially in queer spaces, mm-hmm. saying like, look, you can suck my, like you can be with me too, and my genitals work. They may not work in the way that X able-bodied person's genitals do, but I can still derive pleasure. And I think what's important for films like that for me, and if I do get into porn, my porn name would be Ben Wellington. I don't know why.
I love that you already know.
But that's what it is. Ben Wellington. Well, actually, because I grew up on Wellington Street, and every time someone's named Ben, do you remember the show Felicity?
Yes.
And Ben was the main character and he was hot.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, there it is. So, I don't even remember what I was talking about. So, no, what I want to do with porn is I want to show that a disabled person can provide pleasure. When I work with sex workers, too, I always say to them, like, hey, please tell me what you like and please tell me what gets you off. And please tell me what you enjoy, because I want to spend time pleasing you. I want to spend time being submissive to you. I want to spend time giving you pleasure, because so many people think that when you're with a disabled person, it's your job to get them to get off and then you're done. Mm-hmm. No, it's about creating pleasure for both of us. And so I constantly have to tell the workers that I work with, you can find pleasure in this too, and you can tell me that, and that's okay. And so on film, in porn, I think for people to see that a disabled person can suck a dick to give someone pleasure, a disabled person can eat someone's ass out as a form of pleasure, a disabled person can top somebody maybe in a different way, but that provides pleasure. To show that I can be a pleasure provider is like that I think is important for audiences to see. I would want to create a porn that moves away from the inspirational porn narrative of like, oh, you're disabled, let me take care of you. Like, no, right. I don't want that. I want to fuck you and have you enjoy it is basically what I want. And so I think showing that on camera to an audience, whether that be in porn or an art film about porn, is kind of really, really important.
last time you were on the show, or maybe it was when I was on your show, I can't remember, but one of the times that we've had a conversation, we talked a lot about the toxic masculinity that's present inside of gay male spaces and queer spaces, and the way that like hyper masculinity is so valued, and just the bullshit of the desirability politics inside of queer circles.
Yeah.
And I think you're right to have porn that really shows your body and shows the ways that you engage in sex would not only really help to confront some of that, but so much of the sexual ableism that I know you share on your Facebook page of the ways that people on like hookup apps respond to you. I think it would also help to combat that, because you'd be saying, here I am and here's how my body works and here's how sex can be with me and it's super rad, and it would just help shift that narrative a little bit away from like an able-bodied person kind of imagining what it would be and actually saying like, here's evidence, check this out, it's really hot.
Yeah, and I think like on the sex apps with my titles and everything, I call myself like Thick Dick Cripple, I call myself Bear in a Chair, I am very like upfront about the fact that I'm in a wheelchair, but I also play with it. And so I think a porn that's like Thick Dick Crip starring Ben Wellington and X would be like super hot.
Yes,
I would be so there for that.
Oh my god, that would be fantastic. Or like a bear in a chair, like Ben Wellington.
Yeah, like
that would be pure joy, and I would be 100% on board celebrating that.
To any porn producers listening, I'm right here, I'm ready to go. Just let me know where to sign and let me know how much I'm getting and we'll figure it out.
Heck yeah. Because we desperately, you know, it's like, it's hard enough to find like hot erotic porn that features non-thin able bodies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like older bodies that's not in like a super fetishy way.
Yeah.
Of just like older people having hot sex, where it's not all about like grandma seducing her nephew or whatever. right? Or MILFs, you know. But to be able to feature bodies with a variety of abilities and disabilities all interacting with each other and engaging in a variety of types of sex, you know, I mean, like, let's show group sex, let's show really romantic one-on-one sex, let's show kinky fucking, and it's people in chairs and people with
slings and people with like invisible right. disabilities and,
yes that I am so on board for that.
And like Ben Wellington, I can, like, that's a brand right there. So also anybody who wants to help me like make Ben Wellington for real, let's talk about it. I'll do it.
Well, hopefully, I mean, I know there's some porn directors and producers who have been on the show and listened to the show. So hopefully they're listening. And your brand is about sex and disability and about revealing the things that people don't like to confront and don't like to talk about.
And you know, you know what's funny about the brand? People, I've created other brands around disability that had nothing to do with sex, and nobody paid attention to those. Mm-hmm. Like, I created brands that were like, let's talk about disability, just disability. And that did not get as many views as like when I was like, hey, let's talk about my dick and disability.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it's something lots of people are curious about and have lots of shame around, and also something that we just don't see a lot of. It's certainly not mainstream, so...
No, totally not.
You know, leverage that.
I mean, yeah. I want it to be mainstream. Like, you know, but also at the same time, I kind of get off on the fetish of it all a little bit. Like, I kind of like being, like, I like being someone's first disabled lover. Like, that gets me... rock hard both emotionally and physically, because it's like, oh, you've never experienced disability before, great, let me shape that for you in a way that you can remember that, and like then you can see that sex and disability is not terrifying.
That just sounds like a porn right there.
I mean,
you know, it's just
it?
Like, oh, so you're a virgin, let me help you with that.
Disabled virgin, sorry.
Yes! Please make that too.
Yeah, please. Let's make it happen. I'm so cocky, boys. Let's go.
So one of the other things that I would love for us to just touch on, because there's a lot of people who listen to the show who do have a variety of disabilities, but there's also lots and lots of people who listen to the show who are able-bodied. And I know that ableism is something that I am constantly unpacking and butting up against, and there's so many things that I still have yet to unpack in that space. And one of the things that you do that I think is so powerful and enraging, one, I mean, every time I see you post a screenshot of a conversation that you've gotten on like Scruff or Grindr, like it just makes me so mad. But I also appreciate that you're making visible things that for able-bodied people are probably very invisible.
Yeah.
Is all these posts around sexual ableism and the comments and the ways that people ask you questions and make assumptions about your body and who you are. And so I would love it if you could just talk a little bit about specifically two people who are able-bodied. Like, what does sexual ableism look like? How does it show up so that they can kind of confront that in themselves?
Sure. Sexual ableism is basically, ableism by itself is just generalized discrimination against a disabled person for anything, for being disabled. But sexual ableism tends to happen in the bedroom and tends to happen around your genitals and tends to happen around your body. So people will say things like, hey, does your genitals work? That's sexual ableism. People will say things like, can you get an erection? And they'll often ask you in like really inappropriate ways, or they'll say things like, I had somebody a few weeks ago say stuff like, oh, well, nobody would want to sleep with you. God did all of us a favor by making you in a wheelchair. And they would write this on, like, apps. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
Like, that's really – like, it's like it can be really subtle, like what I just said, or, like, really direct, like what I just said. There's a spectrum. But I think we have to confront the fact that even me, who works in sex and disability, who has disabled friends, who has had disabled sex – I can be an ableist too, and I think we all of us, whether we're disabled or not disabled, have to realize that we're all ableist to begin with, just like we're all racist, just like we're all classist. Mm-hmm. It's all there. We just have to own it and do better, and that's all it is. And and why with those apps and why I am so like people have said to me, like, why did you put their name there? Like, why didn't you black out their name? And I'm like, you know what? When someone's being an asshole, they deserve to be dragged. Like, you deserve to be dragged just a little bit, because then people will see how hurtful it is. And so I don't cover their name. I leave it right out there so that if anybody else is on the apps and wants to find them and say, hey, you're in, like, don't do that again, you're a dickwad, they get a nice dressing down, because people need to see that it's real. And because these apps for many of us are the only accessible space where we can access our sexuality or our sensuality, when somebody does that to us, it really hurts, and it really stings a lot more than, say, somebody who can just turn off the app and go to the bar. For me, I can't do that. The app is where all that stuff happens. So when somebody is rude, it causes me a lot of pain. So I need people to see it. That's why I put it out there quite openly, so you can see that this is not a joke. This really happened. Here it is.
And one of the things that it reveals is, one, how genitals-centric the sex is that most people are having, myself included, and how limited sex is for so many of us, in that sex is this one thing, or this one body part being able to do this one particular thing in this one particular way. And it feels like, oh, well, then I can't fuck you if this, like, one singular part of your body works in a way that's different than I was expecting. I mean, sex can be so many things, but so many of us are closed off to those things, and we're just focused on orgasms and arousal in genitals, and that's kind of the end-all be-all, which is just so limiting for us.
It's so unfortunate. And so one of the things that, like, that working with sex workers has really taught me is that, like, sometimes because I'm not touched the way that I want to be touched, I come really fast. So the first couple times I was with a sex worker, I came within 2 minutes, and I would immediately have a flood of shame of, like, oh, fuck, I just came, the session's now over, I just spent X amount of dollars on this with this worker, and now what's the point? And what I learned was, no, you've come, so who says you can't come again? Or who says you can't build the intimacy now? Like, it doesn't – and so teaching myself that even though my disabled body didn't do – the able-bodied thing and didn't have the money shot, and we didn't have this moment of, like, TV Hollywood ecstasy that we're supposed to have. I've never had that, by the way. Even though my body,
a lot of us haven't.
Like, right?
Thanks, Hollywood.
Yeah, thanks, America. So even though I haven't had those moments, I really value, like, oh, I just came, great, let's cuddle now for a minute. Let's talk about how that felt. Let's just be with each other. And or if I come and they haven't gotten off yet, I'm like, no, my job's not done. Let me now please you. So I'm learning that it's okay, and I have to teach myself as a disabled person to stop apologizing to people before I have sex. Like, oh, hey, I might come fast. Sorry about that. You're not going to get mad, are you? And like, I literally texted that to workers and they'll be like, no, why would I get mad? And I'm like, because it's not sexy. Like, it's not like, so there's all this internalized ableism in those experiences that I'm constantly confronting, and I have to try to change.
And I think too, so much of that is also tied to capitalism and the ways that under capitalism, we're all expected to be like highly productive and to produce in a very specific way. And if we aren't, then we're lazy or broken. And I think like ableism and capitalism are so tied up in each other because, producing and being efficient and performing to like the highest standards, then you're a failure.
Every time you say you said produce just there, I kept picturing like cum shots.
And they rained from the heavens. Yeah, I love that just kind of like note to self of you've got to stop apologizing.
Yeah, and that's a big one for me. I always apologize to new lovers about like sometimes I won't even say sorry. I'll say like, is my disability okay with you? And that's such an apologist like thing. And I'm learning to like, it better be okay with you because I'm working with you and I just paid you money. So, like, make it okay, or have told me before that it's not. Like, I've also had workers. I had somebody on the site that I find my workers from. I said, oh, have you been with a disabled guy before? I'd like to work with you. And he goes, well, yeah, but I would actually charge more for that. And I was like, well, no, like, that's another form of sexual ableism too. Like, if your set rate is X and you charge an extra $100 simply because I'm disabled, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, it is.
That's gross. Most disabled people don't have income. They can just, sure, I'll just add on an extra $100 because, like, and I have negotiated with workers once we've gotten comfortable of, like, rules and things we can, and, like, extra time we can add on for X. Like, I'll say, like, hey, we might need an extra 30 minutes because you have to get me in and out of bed, in my chair, like, undressed and redressed. So I'll say, like, do you have an hour and a half rate that I can look at? Can we look at an hour and a half rate to make this work? I always try to put their livelihood first and realize that it's important to honor that. But when this guy said, oh yeah, I'll charge you an extra $100 just because you're disabled, I was like, that's gross. And so I tried to tell the website, and the website said, oh no, there's no problem here. And I was like, it's like, yeah, there is.
Yeah, the respect has to go both ways, folks.
It totally does.
Yeah. Well, I could totally talk to you for hours at a time because we just have so much fun and the time has flown
so
by.
So much fun. How's it already
so
been
much fun? Oh my God, I know. But for people who want to stay in touch with you, how can they find you online and follow along with all of your adventures?
Sure thing. They can reach out to me at andrewgerza.com. That has all my website, that has the picture of this video there, some other videos I've done in there, my speaking gigs are there. If anybody listening wants to hire a speaker to do, I come and talk about this stuff and I can build a presentation around sexuality and disability for you. If you want to hire me, I do them. I can come to you, or I can do it over Skype. I've done some really cool talks about sex and disability where I didn't even have to leave my house or put on pants. It was kind of awesome. So they can reach me at andrewgerza.com, Andrew Gerza all over the Twitter. I'm going to just plug my podcast because it's my thing. So if you also want to listen to more of this stuff and listen to more of like a really concentrated discussion around sex and disability every week, download Disability After Dark on your podcast thing. And that's how you get a hold of me.
Yay! I will have links to all of the things in the show notes for this episode, so everyone can just click through to follow and subscribe and donate and watch all the things. Thank you so much for being here with us, Andrew. This was delightful.
It was so fun, and I love your show, and Sex Gets Real is one of the best, and I'm so proud of what you do, and I'm glad to be in your company.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh my God, that feels so good to receive. I feel it so hard. Everyone, please totally tune into Andrew's podcast, because there are some rad conversations happening over there that all of us can learn from and sit in and delight in. To everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to hop over to patreon.com for this week's bonus. And until next time, I'm Dawn Sarah. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love is supposed to be.